Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. What does it take to create a truly equitable healthcare system? From entrepreneurs to investors to community workers from across the globe, this season we're speaking to the people aligning capital and technology to find the answer. This episode is produced in partnership with the Johnson & Johnson Center for Health Worker Innovation as part of a series investigating the trends, challenges, and opportunities in the global healthcare sector. My guest today is Alice Lynn Fabiano, Global Director at Johnson & Johnson Global Community Impact. Alice leads on Johnson & Johnson's social innovation efforts, supporting and championing people on the front lines who are at the heart of delivering care. She also had responsibility for the global HIV philanthropic portfolio and continues to champion the prevention of mother-to-child transmission. Prior to joining Johnson & Johnson, Alice worked at the Bridgespan Group, a strategic nonprofit consultancy where she worked with leaders to accelerate social change with a focus on women's empowerment and education. She began her career in Morgan Stanley's investment banking division and was part of the founding team that launched the firm's social finance and microfinance institutions group, raising more than $100 million for women entrepreneurs across the globe. Alice is a founding member of the UN Women Global Innovation Change Coalition and a board member for Patients Know Best, a UK-based electronic patient record social business. She's the youngest daughter of immigrant parents, a mother of two, and a self-identified introvert. Welcome, Alice.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here.
So Johnson & Johnson is one of the world's largest healthcare companies with a long-standing commitment to bring health to the furthest populations in the world and the most vulnerable. What did you do in response to the COVID-19 crisis, and how has COVID-19 accelerated or changed your strategic priorities going forward?
Well, Paul, I can't help but start by remembering the last time we were together at the end of 2019, and we were just launching the Johnson & Johnson Impact Ventures Group, and very much at the Conduit, thinking about the conversations and the technology and capital that can be brought together for change in the world. And my 2020 has been an incredibly different year than any of us thought would really happen. But one of the things I would say is, you'll always come back and remember the point in time when we realized that the coronavirus was going to be at a different size and scale of a global public health crisis than really we've seen in our lifetime. And for me, that point in time came inside of Johnson & Johnson with a few senior executives. I mean, at the time when really it was not well known, it was very much within China and within our China teams. But I do remember a conversation in which we talked about, well, what happens when coronavirus winds up in our fragile health systems and amongst our most vulnerable populations? And that's really what we are addressing and hoping to support communities to do today. And so, Paul, in terms of the question of what we've done, a couple things I would say. One is strategy kind of goes out the door when you're in the midst of a crisis at the size and scale we are now. And the mind goes to two things. I'd say the first was around safety, right, of our employees, of our communities, of our partners, and outreach in that like. And the second was really around how can we support in our own small way the relieving of suffering really amongst the most vulnerable. And so Johnson & Johnson did a few things. One is that a lot of our scientists came together and really prioritized looking for a candidate for the vaccine, and that work is ongoing. The second thing that we did was that we really looked towards stabilizing communities. And finally, what we're looking to do is ensure that essential health services in the most vulnerable places are not being interrupted, so that babies are delivered in places that are safe, as well as in ensuring that essential health services are uninterrupted, whether that be the baby that's being delivered within a quality center, or whether that be a patient with a chronic condition who needs to receive care, and ensuring that those do not suffer from a quality perspective or from a timing perspective during the crisis that we're living through.
So that's an enormous shift in strategy and pivot, and indeed something really difficult to do when you're at the heart of such a large and important corporation. And I guess I'd like to ask how you take into account the insights of health workers into the response and the rebuilding efforts that Johnson & Johnson and your partners have led.
Yeah, I would say that I don't know if it's a huge pivot in strategy more than meeting the movement with partners and approaches that we've been working in close partnership on the ground for a very long time. And part of that very much so is driven by really the values-driven leadership that is everywhere from the top of our company all the way to the scientists and supply chain employees within Johnson & Johnson. What we've really done is hone in on the healthcare worker. And really this longstanding view that if we take care of the healthcare worker, train him or her, support him or her in the work that he or she is doing, that healthcare worker will care for all of us. And that, if I can distill it to one piece, is really where we tend to focus our efforts on, very much so in strengthening the health systems around the world. We very much see the nurses, the doctors, the community health workers as the backbone to the health worker system and to the health system. And very much so as we're looking towards the future, we'll continue to do that. In early 2020, we did announce a 10-year forward-looking projection of a $250 million commitment to support health workers. Because of COVID and really the need that is out there that's even greater in the short-term period of time in the recovery, we've increased that commitment to an additional $50 million. I'm proud to say that it's almost all spent down, and so very much have an urgency around getting the funding and getting partners into the hands of partners who are on the front line.
So can you tell us what role you think social innovation plays or ought to play in creating resilience and equitable healthcare systems?
You know, in many ways, social innovation is embedded within what we'd call a resilient and equitable health system. In some ways, I would say the role it could play is around not accepting business as usual and challenging all of us in a healthy way to dream of the creativity around what status quo looks like and what it could look like in the future of healthcare. For us at Johnson & Johnson and Center of Health Worker Innovation, we've been very focused on the sustainable development goals and particularly number three around health. And we know that by 2030, there's an 18 million gap in health workforce that's only going to be accelerated by COVID and some of the really tricky conditions that our healthcare workers are being put under to rise to the occasion. And we also know that I was reading a report from the Gates Foundation that 25 years of the SDGs and the MDGs have been wiped out through 25 weeks, whether it be around progress in HIV, maternal health, and otherwise. So we really need to harness our ingenuity, our innovation, and really each be change makers in order to create the resilient and equitable healthcare system we want to see. We do that in a couple of different ways, but it really starts with this concept that an idea can come from anyone and anywhere. And so we really see that, particularly amongst our technologists, are really seeing if we can accelerate progress, whether it be around digital health or telehealth. We very much see technology as augmenting the skills of healthcare workers and sometimes even being the healthcare worker where they cannot be at this moment in time given the shortage. The other area I'd probably highlight for this conversation is around the rise of impact investors and impact entrepreneurs. Very much so when nonprofits continue to be a huge part around how social change can and will be made. We are also seeing a number of for-profits, impact-oriented entrepreneurs who are really developing market-based solutions to reach those most in need and deliver healthcare in a quality way. So I'm really excited about both the idea that can come from anyone and anywhere, and really looking at levers around technology and around market-based solutions that can really change the trajectory around resilient and equitable healthcare.
Johnson & Johnson has made a recent foray into corporate venture capital and has launched Johnson & Johnson Impact Ventures. How does this support your social innovation work?
So Johnson & Johnson is one of the oldest corporate venturing companies. It is very much based on fitting into the strategy and investing in strategies for the future of our commercial business. What I've been really excited about was our recent foray into impact ventures, This works within Global Community Impact and the Johnson & Johnson Foundation. And it really is a way for us to be able to further and multiply the impact side of our work related to supporting healthcare workers through, again, market-based solutions. The story, Paul, I would say is very much an entrepreneur story that I would start with. As I mentioned, we have a pretty strong corporate venture arm looking at the strategy of our commercial businesses and lining up startup investments related to that. What we are beginning to see on the corporate venture side was a number of startups coming through that maybe didn't have direct alignment with our commercial business, but certainly were fantastic health startups. And particularly these entrepreneurs were serving populations in low resource settings and where their impact DNA was quite strong. And they weren't seeing a difference between nonprofit and for-profit, but very much seeing how their startup can really be the impact change that they wanted to see. Our first impact investment really came out of this story and is with an impact entrepreneur, Mohammed, who is the founder of Patients Knows Best, and really looking at how care coordination using care records can be a way in which we can improve health outcomes right in the United Kingdom. The second piece that I'll share around the story and the kicker for J&J probably was around our hope that we can help catalyze further investments in the healthcare impact investing sector. And through a series of consultations with G8 members and the Global Impact Investing Network, we learned that healthcare was only 5% of the $500 billion impact investing industry. And when we spoke a lot with other experts in this area, we heard quite a lot that local knowledge in health systems and a deep scientific bench were really important things that were needed in order to invest in health. And so Johnson & Johnson Foundation and Johnson & Johnson Ventures was started really to help catalyze the sector around health impact investing, not just directly through our own investments, but hopefully working in partnership with others who are looking for a more equitable health society within low resource settings.
So one of the questions you, I'm certain, grapple with and have solved and addressed is how you both define and measure impact. I mean, intrinsic to your mission is producing positive social outcomes, particularly in the spheres of health. But it would be really interesting to hear from you how you go about thinking about your theory of change and how you measure impact.
Impact is incredibly important, embedded in everything that we do, particularly as a healthcare company and particularly on the foundation side. For Johnson & Johnson Impact Ventures, we have looked at impact pathways in a couple of different ways. First and foremost, I would say we look at the impact of the entrepreneur. And so particularly looking at startups or social enterprises, we really form a relationship with the entrepreneur and really try to understand the motivations behind starting the business and growing the social business. And we found that the DNA and the impact DNA of the entrepreneur is one of the greatest leading indicators around the impact of the business that he or she will grow. The second piece is that we do look at impact pathways on the investment side before we make investments. And very much that is looking at building impact into the business itself. And so very much so as a business grows, we very much want to see the impact being embedded in the growth of the business itself. And then finally, we look at impact from a measurement and monitoring perspective. And just because the impact is in the entrepreneur, and just because the impact pathways, as we're looking at the potential for an opportunity, were ones that we felt strongly about, I do think that we also want to actually measure on the ground the impact, positive or negative, that sometimes can happen within some of these investments and be very smart about adjusting our programs and our investments based on the data and based on the post-investment monitoring and measurements that we do alongside the entrepreneur.
You also obviously have a deep commitment to an investment in building resilient and well-functioning global healthcare systems. And so I guess I'd like to ask you what success looks like there. How do you define and measure that? How do you know that you have succeeded in that quest?
I think one of the pieces that we're quite focused on is that health systems are not just about the acute periods of time, but they're really about preparing, being resilient, and being a vibrant ecosystem, both inside of the four walls of a clinic or hospital, but then also within the community. And so how we look at the success around a resilient and well-functioning system is probably a little bit broader and from an ecosystem perspective, and how we feel there may be opportunities both in terms of the backbone of the healthcare system being, again, the healthcare workforce and really those on the front lines. And so we invest quite a bit around, if we have a resilient and we have a well-trained nurse, doctor, a community health worker, that is a great indicator around a well-functioning global health system or a health system in and of itself. The other area that we are working towards is there are a lot of factors that happen outside of the hospital walls that ultimately is part of the broader health ecosystem and around ultimately the health of your patients and your consumers. And that really starts with communities. And what we've been looking to do quite a bit is think about how we can bridge the clinic and the communities. And so it is one ecosystem at the end that can really be more well-functioning, be iterative, and look at both staying well, getting well, and being well.
When you invest, what type of healthcare, health tech entrepreneurs are you prioritizing lending support to, and in what regions are they located?
Well, let me tackle the last part of the question first. Johnson & Johnson is a global company. And so from a coverage perspective, we do look at a couple lenses. One is the place with the greatest need. The second is around where we may have what I call boots on the ground, but operations and people to help support some of the entrepreneurs once we do wind up making a grant or investment to them. And then finally, we look at where we can have additive value. So where are their expertise areas, whether it be around maternal care or whether it be around HIV, that we can tap into our scientists, our research community, our marketing team, our legal team to help support these entrepreneurs in. And so regionally, we do take a regional approach, but we are in almost every part of the world, again, prioritizing where there is the most need. In terms of specific tech entrepreneurs, I would say that there's a couple themes that we look at. Again, I would say understanding around health. So health and health tech have become quite synonymous. But I would say, certainly, again, the entrepreneur themselves, the impact lens that a health tech entrepreneur may be putting into the work is one thematic area. The second is that we've been really looking at where technology can really be touching a healthcare worker, really helping that health worker either do their job better, relieve the overstressed burden sometimes on an individual, particularly in low resource settings, or in some places augment their work through AI or natural language processing to help support that healthcare worker again.
And what sort of services and products can help frontline health workers in times of crisis and beyond? And how do you help them gain access to them to the extent that you can?
We've done a lot of research and conversations with partners as well as frontline health workers, particularly related to the coronavirus crisis we're living through right now. And there's a couple things I would highlight. One is around education and information. Sometimes frontline health workers are particularly disconnected to, you know, the central hub. And so getting timely information, accurate information, trusted health information into the hands of the frontline health workers is a piece that we're very focused on so that they can make the best decisions for those that they're serving. The second thing that I probably would highlight is around the resiliency of the frontline health worker themselves. I don't think any of us, you know, could have imagined the situation that we are all living through right now, nonetheless on the frontline health workers, our partners, as well as within our own mental health and behavior scientist teams, really send supportive resiliency messages directly meant to support the frontline health worker during a period of time such as the coronavirus. We do think that this sort of resiliency is not just something that needs to be done during a crisis situation, but really within how we prove a thriving healthcare system is that we need to start prioritizing the well-being and the resiliency of our frontline health workers as part of everyday work that we're doing on the front lines.
So I'd like to know a little more about how J&J is using impact capital to drive inclusion globally in the entrepreneurship space, and also how we can help bring universal healthcare to the hardest to reach and furthest populations in the world.
So we find that capital is one part of the equation, but certainly the expertise and support that we hope that we offer in partnership is really where we can do more than just money. But particularly related to capital, I would say that we find that there's very complementary sources of capital, particularly for us in the Center of Health Worker Innovation. Grant making and supporting through grants is a really important piece of it, particularly during disaster settings. There certainly is a place and a very important place for where there's market failures and where grants can help support, innovate around maybe where governments are and where public health is headed. We also see complementary capital in terms of impact investing. And so very much so where there are market-based solutions, where there are social businesses that can be scaled up and intentionally looking at serving low-income populations or serving those most in need, we do find the sustainability around impact investments to be a great complement to the grant-making work that we do. And then finally, we always do tack on the question of, you know, why J&J and how J&J can support beyond the money. And we do tend to bring in our experts, our employees, as well as some business assets that can help drive that change.
It's clear from your role at J&J, but also what you've done throughout your career, that you are a person who stimulates and supports innovation with impact. And I'd be interested in the advice that you would give to companies who are similarly looking to engage in impact investing. How have you managed to operate successfully in the space and to play a leadership role within such an important and large corporation doing this kind of work?
I'd say that it feels like right now is an important moment in time to really become much more involved and be much more integrated within the work, whether it be around societal impact or impact investing. I believe that a lot of corporations are doing that and will continue to do that. It's a very different climate than I would say a decade ago, where the role of the corporation was seen as quite different than it is today. And so I do think the sea change is happening, and I'm really excited to see it continue to be a part of where the future may belong. Related to any advice that I would give to companies, I mean, I would say that by and large, even having the conversation and asking for advice is a really good start. We did a lot of listening. I continue to do a lot of listening and learning along the way. Respect those who are experts in the space. Respect those who have dedicated their lives on the front lines, really around social change, and seeing our work as supporting and in service of those change agents. I would say a couple other things I've learned along the way. The first is around not underestimating the internal change process, right? So corporations are different, and I've worked in civil society and private sector, private foundations as well. Corporations are different. And so we do really need to respect and, as a corporate entrepreneur, really understand and take the company with you along that change process as you're learning. And then I've learned some really great nibbles from our advisors along the way related to impact investing, and I'll share three of them with you. The first is that impact investment has two eyes. The big eye is the impact, and the little eye that comes after is investment. So don't lose track of why we started to begin with and to keep impact front and center. The second is around looking at teams, not just the entrepreneur. And really, the successful businesses are those who start with the entrepreneur, but also realize that their teams are really important in order to scale, and the entrepreneur can't do it themselves. And then finally, I would say look inwards towards what assets you can bring to the table for these very busy and time-stretched entrepreneurs. You know, funding is the first part, but what else can we support as corporations, whether it be on the communication side, whether it be on the legal and R&D side, whether it be on the expertise side, but ask myself constantly, what is the question of how we can support the success of these entrepreneurs?
So you clearly occupied leadership roles in your life, and I'd like to ask a question, both as pertains to you, but also a broader question. As we look to hopefully a more just and a more equitable future as we emerge from this pandemic, what kind of leadership do you think is needed to ensure that we build more equitable healthcare systems in particular?
A couple things I'll share with you. One is that from a health perspective, I'd love to see the health workforce, and particularly the people in positions of power in the health workforce, reflect the population that we're serving. Certainly a lot of conversations very timely right now in the US around racial and social justice. And we know that representation and decision-making are really important for health outcomes. And we know that there's an increase in terms of patient satisfaction, in terms of patients' adherence, if the health worker looks like and represents the patient. So that's one piece I would highlight. The second piece I would say is that the future of the healthcare worker looks very different. Who is a leader in the health system is very different. And so I'd love to see that turn a bit on its head and very much, again, listening to the patient and listening to the frontline health worker. Sometimes that is somebody inside the four walls of a hospital, whether it be a nurse or a care coordinator or a peer coordinator. Sometimes it's the patient themselves. And very much seeing self-care and demand-driven healthcare being a big part around how the future can look like. So I really do hope that healthcare leaders really shift in terms of the diversity of who we are and who we listen to, and bring those voices at the table from the very beginning to design the future that we all want to see.
So we think of people who work in the heart of the healthcare sector as people who see wellness and sickness, suffering and recovery. And at this moment, I think it's fair to say we've seen a higher share of hardship and suffering than we've seen in a very long time. And so in that context, what is it that gives you hope?
A lot of things give me hope. I find that in a point like this, everyone is rising to the occasion in a way in which perhaps folks were either too busy to before, perhaps folks thought it wasn't part of what their, kind of quote unquote responsibilities are. But I do find that people give me a lot of hope, the resilience and resolve during a period of time like this, that we're going to get through this together. We're going to band together where titles and names and institutions do not matter. We see this in the scientific community about sharing data in a way that hasn't been shared before. And we see that on the ground, whether it be amongst our healthcare workers, amongst our partners, and within J&J as well. I think that we're going to get to a point in time, we may already be there, where, young people are ultimately is going to drive the future. And I say that a little bit in earnest, where, the future is where people are really not willing to accept, and young people are not willing to accept the status quo. And this moment in time, I think we will rise from it. And I'm really looking forward to being part of the solution and supporting those who are looking at a more equitable and inclusive health ecosystem of the future.
Well, Alice, thank you so much for this conversation. I think it's fair to say that at this moment in history, those of you who are working in the heart of some of the most innovative and largest healthcare companies in the world bear a special responsibility, and also the world owes you a special debt for the contribution that you are able to make and are making to address this once in a century phenomenon that is the COVID-19 pandemic. So for everything that J&J does and for everything that you do in helping to lead and contribute to those efforts, a really sincere vote of thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you for listening to Conduit Conversations. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. To learn more about the Johnson & Johnson Center for Health Worker Innovation, please visit chwy.jnj.com. Once more, chwy.jnj.com.
And for more information on The Conduit and our community of change makers, please visit theconduit.com.